number 11871, Deerfield Plantation, Phase 2B, Property Owners Association, Incorporated versus United States Army Corps of Engineers, whenever the lawyers are ready. I'm sorry, could you come a little closer so I can...
Thank you, Your Honor. We just had some exhibits that we filed a notice that we were going to be using. Just a minute to set them up.
Judges with old eyes, it's always perilous to use exhibits, but...
Well, they're much smaller in the joint appendix.
I recognize that, yes.
May it please the court, my name is Amy Armstrong. With me today is Michael Corley. We are here on behalf of Deerfield Plantation Phase 2B Property Owners Association, and Frank Yelenko and his wife Lorraine are members of the POA here with us from Surfside Beach, South Carolina. And what brings us before the court today is the district court's ruling that under the Rapanos Plurality Standard for defining waters of the United States, a water feature must be relatively permanent and flowing in order to qualify for jurisdiction. In other words, a relatively permanent standing water does not meet the test. The POA represents the property owners that live in Deerfield, and just by way of this map, because I think you need to put into context how the POA and the Deer Track Golf property at issue interrelate. The golf course is surrounded by and surrounds the POA. The golf course is actually bisected by the property. So the golf course is in red, and you can see that the POA property are the lots within and surrounding the golf course. So that's the Property Owners Association. And why that's important is because the golf course has a series of ponds and ditches and canals, channels that carry the drainage waters of Deerfield Plantation Phase 2B, as well as the golf course. And those waters are carried across and through the POA property. If those channels that carry the drainage waters through the POA and the golf course are what is in dispute. In this case, those streams and channels do hold water, and under a proposed development plan, Deer Track Golf intends to fill and alter virtually all of the ponds and the ditches, the canals, and channels on the property as part of its development plan. And once those streams and channels are filled and paved over, then the water is going to have to go somewhere, and that's what brings Deerfield initiated this Clean Water Act citizen suit. The filling is of real significance to the POA members, who have already expressed to this court, both by exhibit and through the joint appendix, that they've experienced extensive flooding that's caused damage to homes. And if this decision proceeds under the district court's ruling, then they stand to have significantly suffer additional flooding. What the Corps did was issue a revised jurisdictional determination. It's a little bit difficult to tell from this far away, so we blew it up just so we could look at the area in question a little bit more clearly. I believe it's also in your joint appendix, but what this shows is this is the Corps' map that they actually included with this jurisdictional determination. The blue lines are outlining the areas that are the water features that are in dispute, and this hatched area represents the area over which the Corps asserted jurisdiction and the district court affirmed that jurisdiction. Now, the Supreme Court hasn't had a lot of opportunities to review or rule on Clean Water Act cases, but they have certainly ruled on the definition of waters of the United States. The first case was the Riverside Bayview case, where they said that Congress intended to give a broad reading of the boundaries of waters of the United States. Then in 2001, we had the Solid Waste Agency of Northern Cook County case. And In that case, the court looked at whether it had jurisdiction, the federal government had jurisdiction over isolated wetlands by way of the migratory bird rule. It was a Commerce Clause case, and the court ultimately ruled that these isolated wetlands were not jurisdictional. The next question after that was, how much of a connection do we need to establish Clean Water Act jurisdiction and over waters of the United States? And that was when the 2006 case of Rapanos came down, and it looked specifically at what kinds of connections needed to be established in order to qualify as waters of the United States. And what the Deerfield POA asserts in this case is that the district court erred in applying the Rapanos plurality standard, which is that waters of the state include all relatively permanent standing or flowing waters that have a connection to waters, to traditional navigable waters. And what the plurality emphasized in enunciating this test is that you have to have a continuous presence of water, that there is an ordinary presence of water, and that it's connected to navigable, traditional navigable waters. And the intent was to avoid jurisdiction over transitory puddles and ephemeral streams that the plurality discusses. And the plurality goes on further to say, in order for water to not be relatively permanent, it's got to dry up for some period of time, and that drying up has to be continuous and frequent enough in order to knock it out of jurisdiction. Even Justice Kennedy, in his concurring opinion, reiterates and recognizes that continuous presence of water and connectivity are the plurality test. But what the district court did was change that test. And instead of applying the relatively permanent standing or flowing waters with a direct connection to traditional navigable waters, what the district court did was essentially eliminate all relatively permanent standing waters that have a connection to traditional navigable waterways. What the district court said was that there's no evidence of relatively permanent flow, therefore these are not waters of the United States. And so the issue now before this court is whether under the Rapanos plurality decision, waters can be relatively permanent waters with a surface connection to meet the definition of waters of the United States.
How do these ornamental ponds, though, have a surface connection to the waters that the Corps accepted jurisdiction over after they revised their review?
Well, there are a number of, the majority of the ponds on site are connected to the ditches and channel systems through pipes and underwater conduits. There are photographs in the administrative record around, or the joint appendix around 152 to 158 that show the pond with a culvert that goes underneath
But except during storms, there's no flow.
That's the problem with the analysis, is that we don't have to have flow. There's water in those.
So what do you have to have? You have to have some kind of ecological connection.
The ecological connection gets to the significant nexus analysis. And I'll be glad to talk a little bit more about that, but I think before you get to the significant nexus analysis, you first want to look at whether there are relatively permanent waters. And those
isolated ponds don't meet the definition.
Well, ponds would, believe that
the prior Supreme Court case, you're not suggesting, it has such a long name, Solid Waste Agency of
Northern
Cook County. The court specifically said that isolated ponds don't meet that definition.
And we would agree that isolated ponds don't meet that definition. In this case, the ponds have the direct connection to all of the channels.
But you said some of them do.
The majority of them do. There are about 20 ponds. I think there are several, two or three, that don't actually have a pipe or some sort of channel that connects them all together. But I think the focus of our brief has been on the channels because, if you look at the maps, the channels are probably the most prominent feature, and they are the areas that where there is water. And there's water in those channels that's not disputed.
Well, you wouldn't disagree then that not all standing bodies of water are a basis for jurisdiction.
That is correct. We would not.
So
it would need to have a.
Where does the Corps draw the line?
when there is a surface connection to a traditional navigable water.
A surface connection?
There has to be a continuous connection. So the courts have looked at these things a little differently, and they have interpreted if you are connected by a culvert underground, that's sufficient. A good example of this is in this very case, the waters over which the Corps asserted jurisdiction, they said that they're tributaries of relatively permanent waters. They flow under a culvert that goes under some properties, individual lots, that goes under the highway, under U.S. Highway 17, and then flows out into Dogwood Lake. So what the court has said, that's enough of a connection to maintain...
The court? What court?
Well...
The court?
The Corps has said that, certainly in this case, and I think there are multiple cases that talk about these kind of ditches that are separated. I don't know if there's a case that specifically talks about a ditch an underground connection being sufficient, but that's the way it's traditionally and historically been interpreted by the Corps.
Corps also has regs, though, directed at ornamental ponds, right? I mean, in this economy where we've got a lot of, in this golf economy in particular, we've got a lot of failed golf courses around the country, and they've got probably a lot of hazard ponds that were built by diking, to use the Corps' term. The Corps has somewhat reasonably come up with some guidance for how it will operate in that environment, right? And they've said upland ornamental ponds are generally outside the jurisdiction,
right? And that is in the court guidance, which is, as this court is aware, is not binding. So it's not in regulation. It's actually in the court guidance that talks about upland ornamental ponds, and that it also won't assert jurisdiction over upland dug ditches. But in this case, the court has actually already broken with its guidance, because all the areas over which it has already asserted jurisdiction were created in the same manner in which all the other water features on the property were created, and that is that they are artificial. So the artificial nature doesn't negate jurisdiction, and there are a number of cases in which the courts have held that those man-made features are covered under Clean Water Act jurisdiction. One of them is a Fourth Circuit case of U.S. v. Deaton that held that these ditches that are man-made constitute waters of the United States.
Provided there are other indicia that would bring them into that status, like the sinuosity, if I'm using the term correctly, and bank and bed and that sort of thing, which these inspectors evidently didn't find beyond the lines they drew.
Well, so there are two tests. The plurality test, which is that there are relatively permanent standing or flowing waters, and then there's Justice Kennedy's concurring test, which is the significant nexus test. And it's within Justice Kennedy's concurring opinion that he discusses those kinds of factors. He discusses looking at hydrologic factors and looking at ecologic factors. But the significant nexus test is a separate test from the relatively permanent waters test. And what Scalia and the plurality said is that you have to have a continuous connection, a continuous presence of water, that it has to be connected to a traditional navigable waterway. The case of U.S. v. Ruth, it was a district court case, but in Virginia, what the court said the analysis should be in determining waters of the United States is whether water molecules in the one water feature are likely to intermingle with water molecules in a traditional navigable waterway. The uncontradicted evidence in this case is that they are all connected, that these waters eventually all flow out into the Atlantic Ocean. The core zone map shows that the series of ditches and ponds, the majority of the ponds and ditches are all interconnected and flow out into the Atlantic Ocean. And so you look at that, I would suggest that that's the first test that you look at. If you don't have relatively permanent waters, then you would go on and look at the significant nexus analysis, which in this case, the appellants assert wasn't done, because Kennedy talks about the kinds of factors that need to be looked at, the flood buffering, stormwater retention, the ability of waters to carry pollutants. Those are the kinds of things that Kennedy said needed to be looked at in determining whether there's a significant nexus analysis. In this case, the Corps didn't do any of that. It essentially looked at, well, it did just look at flow factors, and it focused on flow factors, and that was the basis of its opinion on both tests. And so you can't apply the same test to both the plurality's requirements and the significant nexus under Kennedy's, which is another fundamental flaw, is that there was a failure to actually conduct and look at the factors that one would look at under a significant
nexus
analysis.
You're seeking to rely on Justice Kennedy's test, isn't that right?
I think the central issue in this case is the plurality's test, the relatively permanent standing or flowing waters test that are connected to traditional navigable waters. And what we are saying is that relatively permanent standing waters that have a connection to traditional navigable waters are included as waters of the United States under the plurality test.
But where's the connection in this case? On that test, where's the connection? There's no flow.
Well, you don't have to have flow to have a connection. I mean, these features are, there's no obstruction in any of these channels that's cutting them off from the tributaries of traditional navigable waters. There's no obstruction. The water is making it there and through. It's all one continuous.
Aren't you relying on pipes, though, for these connections? And really, the natural flow is only implicated in terms of stormwater?
There's
intermittent stormwater, because you do have these pipes connecting, and how does that factor into your analysis?
Well, I see I'm out of time.
You can respond to the
question. I've got a minute left. So they aren't all, if you look right here, these aren't, there's no pipe between these areas. So there are certainly areas like here also where there is no pipe. It's directly abutting. It's one continuous channel. It's just jurisdiction ends abruptly in the middle of that channel. And I'm the other part of your question, I just lost it for a moment.
No, I just want to know how the existence of pipes that supported the flow, other than at stormwater times, affected your analysis.
Right. Well, there's water in those pipes and in the ditches all of the time.
So you're saying water in the pipes is good enough?
It's a connection. It's a connection. The water is actually connected.
It doesn't have to be a natural connection.
It does not have to be a natural connection. That's
what do you rely on for that proposition?
This court's opinion in U.S. v. Deaton. Those are man-made ditches that this court asserted jurisdiction over.
Those aren't pipes.
Isn't that
different? The structure?
Well, there are some pipes, but there are a lot of ditches. And it's not clear in Deaton whether there were pipes or not. Typically, ditches are connected to other navigable waters through, they go under roads, along roads. And so that's not within the record to answer, and it's not addressed specifically in these cases. But there are other cases, North Carolina Shellfish Growers Association and Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, that say that these man-made artificial structures are sufficient to confer jurisdiction if there's a relatively permanent presence of standing or flowing water. See, I'm out of time.
Thank you very much.
May it please the court, I'm Elizabeth Ann Peterson for the federal appellees. I would like briefly to discuss the appellant's standing before getting to the merits of the case. While the appellants have now submitted additional affidavits and other materials to support their allegations of injury from the action that they challenge here, those materials actually do not remedy the difficulty here. To establish standing, the immediacy and redressability elements of standing require that the injury be the result of an action by the defendant and not of a third party that isn't before the court. And in this case, all that has been done by the federal agencies is the issuance of a decision that affects only the regulatory requirements for the developer in this case. The decision that the Clean Water Act does not apply to the water hazards on this golf course did not authorize anyone to build a housing development, and all of the injury that's alleged in the materials that have been submitted is injury that the appellants believe may come from that development, not from the fact that those waters that are currently present on the golf course are not waters of the United States.
So you distinguish PI?
That's correct, Your Honor.
How do you do that? That's not their property either. That's a nearby road.
Various reasons. It's not a question of whose property it is, Your Honor. In the PI case, the plaintiffs challenged the issuance of a permit. There was no permit issued here to conduct any activities that would result in harm to the homeowners or the homeowners association, which, by the way, is the only plaintiff here. So to the extent that the allegations of injury go to things like recreational and wildlife and habitat watershed issues, the homeowners association would have to establish that those kinds of interests are germane to its purposes as an association, which it clearly has not done. But even I would grant that the protection against flooding and protection of the value of homes and so on is the typical purpose of a homeowners association. It is not the injury that was alleged in the complaint here, but the decision, the opinion of the federal agencies who've been sued here, that they don't have jurisdiction to regulate this property, didn't change anything with regard to the likelihood of additional flooding. In other words,
well, I don't know about that. Maybe it's a step removed, but if the federal agencies thought they did have jurisdiction and then they did make some ruling that the plaintiffs are asking for, then it does affect their whole claim here. I think standing is not your strongest argument.
All right. Well, I believe that the indirect nature of that does go contrary to this court's rulings in cases like Morant Potomac River against PA, which is at 577 Federal 3rd, 223. It's a 2009 case, in case the court is interested. There does need to be a direct impact from the challenged action in order for the immediacy and redressability elements of standing to be satisfied. But in this case, there is, even assuming that the court does have jurisdiction, there is the claims of the appellants have to be rejected. My opponent actually mentioned that the critical issue in the Rapanos case is the connection. Rapanos discusses where the line is drawn between waters of the United States and upland. In this case, the Corps of Engineers found all of the physical characteristics of a continuous water on only that approximately one-third of an acre of property at the outfall from this entire tract. And going upstream from that, it found abundant terrestrial vegetation, no clear channel, no evidence of an ordinary high water mark, nothing that would grant jurisdiction to the Corps of Engineers to regulate those lands as waters. Upstream of that are these impoundments and ditches and ponds that were excavated in dry land. The Corps of Engineers traditionally has not regulated those kinds of structures as waters, and there is certainly nothing in the Rapanos decision to suggest that the Supreme Court believes that that was inappropriate or has overruled the practice of the Corps of Engineers not to treat those kinds of structures as waters of the United States.
Was the Corps' analysis of connection confined to flow when you really get down to it? What did they look at beyond flow?
Your Honor, what they looked at was whether there was any evidence that those structures were conveying water into a water of the United States. In other words, of some kind of at least seasonal connection between those impoundments and ditches and whatnot.
Does connection mean flow?
In this context, it has to. It does. It may not always, but in this case, there is no connection between water standing upstream and a tributary downstream merely because there are structures that are connected. It's the waters that have to be connected. And if the water isn't moving, there's nothing to say these molecules are going to intermingle with these molecules. They're sitting there. They're not moving. So the notion that a standing water is necessarily subject to regulation under the Clean Water Act, under the plurality standards, is just simply incorrect. It but has to be connected.
When you have a wetlands that's adjacent to waters of the United States, we know from Rapanos that there is a connection, but there isn't flow per se.
There is a hydrological connection, though, Your Honor, and in this case it was established that there is no wetland here. And therefore...
No, I understand that there's no wetland, but the point remains that we have circumstances where we have a connection without flow.
But not necessarily, Your Honor. I don't know that. We don't know that water in wetlands isn't continuously flowing. We don't know that. In fact, the likelihood is that a hydrological connection does involve flow and recharge. But that's not the issue here. The issue here is whether you can say that water standing in an artificial structure that was built in dry land is connected to waters of the United States because every once in a while an overflow event causes the molecules to move. And the Rapanos case directly, or the plurality decision in Rapanos directly refutes that when it discusses intermittent streams and stormwater runoff. So the Corps of Engineers, in other words, was not obliged to expand its regulatory jurisdiction by the plurality in decision in Rapanos, and instead that decision is entirely irrelevant to its practice of presuming that artificial structures that have been excavated in dry land are not waters of the United States. So you need to look for a connection to those waters of the United States, and in this case, what was found was an abundance of terrestrial vegetation, no channels, no visible channels, no ordinary high water mark, no evidence that those ditches and swales that were constructed in order to create the golf course constitute tributaries that should be regulated as waters of the United States. And if there are no further questions, I will turn the rest of my time over to Ms. Shaheed, who will be who represents Deer Track Golf.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Mary Shade from the law firm of Nixon Pruitt. I'm here with my co-counsel, Stephen Groves. We represent the property owner of the South Course, Deer Track Golf Incorporated. As the court is aware, the golf course was closed because it was failing financially. Our clients put it under contract with a major home builder in the 2005-2006 period. A development plan was approved for a residential development on the existing golf course, which would be immediately adjacent to the existing homes owned by Deerfield Plantation Phase 2B. Development plan was approved, state and local environmental permits were obtained, and a barrage of litigation and challenges followed with the objections of the appellant. I think it's important for this court, when viewing the injuries that the appellant describes, to be aware of certain factual findings made in a state administrative proceeding in a case that we rely on and cite in our appellee brief, but specifically, there has been no flooding in the section of Deerfield Plantation Phase 2B known as Circle Drive and Plantation Drive since 2001. There were two flooding events described, one in March of 2001 and then Hurricane Floyd. Hurricane Floyd caused conditions of generalized flooding all over Horry County and eastern portions of North Carolina. Horry County government, sensitive to the concerns of these homeowners and other surrounding homeowners in something called the Carroll Pines area, spent $2 million to improve drainage. Basically what they had to do, they had to get water out of there. Water was backing up. They had to get water out of there. They did that by building a detention pond, photographs of that are in the record, and by constructing two 60-inch pipes under Highway 17 to make sure water flowed out, didn't back up in. And there have been no record of flooding since 2001. Because of all the money Horry County spent, this is in the ALJ order, all the money the Horry County spent, they held Bill Clark Homes to a very high standard in designing stormwater retention for this neighborhood. And as a result, Bill Clark Homes was required to do two things. One is, instead of the stormwater flowing through Circle Drive and Plantation Drive, they routed 90% of it around Circle Drive and Plantation Drive through their new development and the infrastructure they were installing. And secondly, currently, these ponds, they're old, they were constructed in the 80s or 90s, they haven't been maintained. They're about 11 acres of detention. Bill Clark Home was, in fact, enhancing detention by adding 22 acres, doubling the amount of detention, adding 22 acres of ponds. The actual amount of storage per acre increased by almost 90%. The current ponds have about 5 foot per acre storage, and the new development was predicted to have 90 feet per acre storage. So it increased it significantly. So I think those facts are important for the court to take note of. As to the merits of the lower court's decision, this may be the only time this court hears somebody come and complaining that the court did not assert enough jurisdiction. And the posture of all the other cases are usually the court has asserted too much jurisdiction. EPA looked at this, the court looked at it, they gave it a hard look. We know that EPA and the court are never shy about asserting jurisdiction over what they believe to be waters of the United States. Thus, we have this record of litigation through the federal courts and the United States Supreme Court. And the purpose of those cases was an effort to limit the court's jurisdiction. Rapanos was a decision intended to limit the extension of jurisdiction, which between the Swank case and the Rapanos case, the court was taking their jurisdiction way up man-made drainage features and grabbing wetlands that were adjacent to those drainage features. This is illustrated in the Precon case that this court decided, where 488 aggregate acres of wetlands were grabbed 7 miles upstream a drainage tributary. So we ask that the court consider that Rapanos is intended to limit jurisdiction. And then finally, that the court should look also that the court here, in making its decision, relied on a regulation that Rapanos did not invalidate. The Corps said in non-tidal tributaries, we extend our jurisdiction to the ordinary high water mark. And here's what Kennedy and Scalia said about that regulation. They didn't invalidate it, but nor did they say it was too narrow. What they both said in the plurality and the Kennedy opinion is that the ordinary high water mark might be too broad of a way to get your jurisdiction. Scalia said in his opinion that the ordinary high water mark could extend waters of the U.S. to virtually any drainage feature where drainage and rainwater might leave a mark. And then Justice Kennedy said that the breadth of the ordinary high water mark leaves wide room for regulation of drains, ditches, streams, and other areas remote from a traditional navigable water. But very important for resolution of this case, Justice Kennedy went on to say that the ordinary high water mark can be a rough approximation of flow and, quote, may provide a reasonable measure of whether minor tributaries bear significant nexus to other minor tributaries. And that's what exactly the situation we have here. What Justice Scalia said was where there's a direct connection of a relatively permanent water to a traditional navigable water, that RPW is jurisdictional. But where there is not, and you have to have a standing or flowing RPW directly connected to a traditional navigable water. Where it's not an RPW, determined here by the Corps by applying a regulation that the Supreme Court has said may be too broad of a way to describe your jurisdiction, not narrow. But when it's not an RPW, it becomes what they call a non-relatively permanent water. Its connection to the traditional navigable water, and I'm pointing over here because it's off-site, the detention pond, the pipes, the big Lake Dogwood, and then the Atlantic Ocean, is interrupted by the RPW. This area that appellants want so much for the court to assert jurisdiction over is not directly connected to the traditional navigable water, but interrupted by the RPW. So we would ask that the court recognize that the Supreme Court's direction in Rapanos was followed to the T by the Corps of Engineers and that the district court orders be upheld. Thank you.
Thank you. What the federal defendant has just said is that to have flow, connection means flow. And there is no legal support for the idea that connection means flow, in this case or in any other case. But there's no dispute.
But flow can be the connection.
I think that flow or standing water are different. The connection is a separate kind of question. I mean, there's no dispute that in this case there's flow. The question is whether it's continuous flow. So we have continuous connection with non-continuous flow, and that's enough under the plurality test. If this court affirms the district court, then you will have to conclude as a matter of law that relatively permanent standing water that has a connection to traditional navigable waters is insufficient to confer jurisdiction, and we believe that directly contravenes the Rapanos plurality test of relatively permanent waters.
What about all the terrestrial plantings that are in between?
That the terrestrial plantings that are in between?
In between the waters of the United States, and in this case, the permanent standing waters that some would contend are upland.
Well, there aren't any plantings.
Plantings is the wrong word.
There's vegetation. There is
vegetation.
There's vegetation. And I think, you know, one of the things that we were curious about when we read the Corps' jurisdictional determination is that it didn't look at whether the vegetation that was in those channels is wetland vegetation. That would have been part of the significant nexus analysis that it should have looked at. What kind of vegetation is in those channels? Is it, what functions is it providing? Is it trapping sediment that would be moving into downstream traditional navigable waters? Is it providing nursery grounds for species that will end up in traditional navigable waters and therefore have a commerce clause connection? There wasn't any analysis of that. And we understand that under the deferential standard, we're bound by what the Corps' technical conclusions were. There weren't any on those points, and that's the deficiency in the significant nexus analysis. I think that Judge Motz, you pointed out that the standing issue, I don't think, is a very strong issue for them. There have been repeated cases. The Fourth Circuit, in the case of Pye, was a prime example of a case where the court said that an adjoining owner has a right to protect the integrity of their neighborhoods. The district court itself said that it based its conclusion that the district court had jurisdiction to hear this case because, but for the Corps' decision, all of the channels on this property and the ponds can be filled without any further requirements. So the district court itself recognized that there's nothing standing in the way of construction on the site, but for the Corps' jurisdictional determination. And so that's why there's an immediacy. And I just wanted to address that. On the issue of ordinary high watermark, Ms. Shade raised the regulatory definition and talked about the purpose of the ordinary high watermark. And what Deerfield would submit is that the first thing that the Corps needs to do is apply the definition of waters of the United States. So first they determine whether it meets either the relatively permanent standing or flowing waters test or the significant nexus test, and then it looks at the extent of those waters by applying this ordinary high watermark definition. The ordinary high watermark looks at the extent of the waters. In other words, you're looking to see we know that these are waters of the United States. Does the water come up any higher than it is right now? How high does the water normally come in order for us to define the limits of what that jurisdiction is? But that, you only get to that question after you've already done the analysis under the Rapanos, either Rapanos test. And what we allege is that under the Rapanos plurality test, there is clearly no dispute thus far that there's been a connection. And I apologize that I was a little lost to be able to cite a case that talks about a pipe being a significant connection. Co-counsel has reminded me that there are cases out there that hold that a pipe, man-made conduit, is sufficient to establish that connectivity. It wasn't raised as an issue by either of the defendants in this case, so it wasn't briefed in this case. But we've been proceeding all along with the assumption that there is a connection. It's just whether standing water is sufficient to confer jurisdiction or whether it actually has to be flowing water. And we believe that in order to uphold the Rapanos opinion, that this court has to reverse the district court because the district court erred in imposing a flowing water requirement that just is not in the plurality opinion. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will ask the court to adjourn court, and then we'll come down and greet the lawyers.